This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's talk about not guilty. What could possibly happen there if this jury finds Lindsay Clancy not guilty by lack of criminal responsibility? She doesn't walk out of the courtroom. She goes somewhere else. And the question everybody in the audience is asking is what somewhere else actually means for the woman who's already paralyzed, already in a hospital, and already on 24-hour S watch. Under Massachusetts law, not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect verdict does not mean release. The court can order the defendant hospitalized for up to 40 days of observation. After that, the DA or hospital superintendent can petition for involuntary commitment. Eric Faddis, defense attorney and former prosecutor, is here with myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. So what happens in the courtroom, Eric, the moment the verdict is read, if it is not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect? What happens to Lindsay at that moment?
Yeah, you know, Lindsay's not going home. She's not going home anytime soon. That's for darn sure. Either way, regardless of what the jury comes out with. So, you know, her supporters who might be outside the courthouse, they're not going to see her. It's not going to be something like that. Instead, she's going to go through that 40-day commitment at a psychiatric facility. They're going to assess whether – they're going to assess her dangerousness. And then after that, the DA can petition to continue the involuntary commitment. And that petition can be reevaluated every year. But it's also kind of an indefinite sentence into the psychiatric facility. So it could be forever. It could be a year and a half. There's such a wide range in terms of what this might look like in the coming years for Lindsay Clancy.
How much does this vary from state to state in as far as how they hold someone? Because just from experience and seeing other cases and just life, psychiatric facilities, unless they're getting paid and your insurance is covering it, they don't necessarily want to keep you there unless they have no choice but to keep you there by law. How much or how willing, I guess, are facilities, and I guess it varies by facility, but state law too, to keep the person there? How often do you see folks, it's rare that anyone wins a defense of this sort of argument, but the ones that do, how often do they stay incarcerated or in a mental health facility indefinitely? I know Andrea Yates is still there because she wants to be. Different state, though. Different set of laws. Is that the same sort of thing everywhere, where if Lindsay Clancy is to say, keep me locked up here, I don't want to be out, that they would honor that? Or is it at some point, we think you're good enough to go? Because they do that all the time with 72-hour holds and things of that nature, where people are not good to go, but guess what? Insurance ain't covering the bill anymore, so enjoy the paper bag and the bridge down by the river. What are your thoughts?
Right. You know, we like to think that these determinations in terms of whether to let somebody out from a psychiatric facility after being found not guilty by reason of insanity are by the letter of the law. They're by the book. And hey, we look at these three things and if they're met, we let them out. If they're not, we don't. The reality is much more complicated. There are other interests involved. There are funding interests. You know, to house a human being inside of a facility and make sure they're fed and, don't die and things like that. So just like a normal prison, that costs tens of thousands per year per person. And they have thousands of, or not, it's not more people in these facilities. So when we add into that the level of care that might be required for somebody in Lindsay Clancy's situation, you better believe that facility might be looking at their books and they're like, gosh, we've got a funding issue. We've got monetary considerations here. Those things can creep into these determinations, whether it's talked about publicly or expressly or not.
So here are the numbers for Massachusetts, since I love looking at our numbers.
Yes.
In between. So this is for all individuals, not just filicide in cases like this for paternal, you know what I mean, for women that were convicted and not Not
yes.
Yes, you know. So this is it. So this is for everyone, including males ever convicted. The shortest ever was for an older male for not criminally being responsible. The shortest ever was 3.5 years because he's older and had other issues going on. The average is about 16 years, and this is all people, not just women committed because of filicide. The shortest, I mean, I told you shortest, and the longest was about 40. So she's looking, based on this average in Massachusetts, at least about 15 years, 16 years, if she even wants to get at that point. So for those that say she's just going to walk free and go and have more babies. Now, we covered this yesterday as well. Remember, if you're looking at law of average, because some people are saying, well, she'll just get out, have more babies, and do it again. No, because if we're looking at the average of 16 years, she'll be in the middle of, again,
she'll
pure
have passed
speculation.
That,
past that point where she can have babies. Yeah. And so that won't be a concern. For those that were most concerned about her having babies and doing that again, no, it ain't going to happen.
Is there ever conditions on releases on things like this? If she is to again, we're just trying to play out all the possibilities here because everybody's thinking of them. Not guilty, goes to a facility. Are there conditions ever of, okay, well, you don't need to live in the facility anymore, but you can't have any more babies? And short of, you know, making that medically impossible, are there ever conditions of like, well, if you get pregnant, you're coming right back here, and then the baby's going to go to, you know, foster care or something? I mean, are things like that, do things like that exist, Eric?
Well, they do exist in some contexts. For example, if there was someone who was convicted of a gang shooting and they went to prison, then they're on parole. You have conditions of parole. You get to be out in the community, but there are things you can't do. For example, you can't associate with known gang members. You can't be their friend. You can't go to the movies with them. So those conditions have been determined lawful, whereas courts have determined other, sometimes more exotic and uncommon conditions, unlawful. And I would venture to say that I don't think the government could prevent a person from trying to have a child if they were going to release her. I don't think they could say, hey, we'll let you out, but you cannot engage in this fundamental constitutional right of trying to procreate because we're worried something bad's going to happen. I think a judge would determine that might be cruel and unusual punishment. There might be a due process issue. I just would be very skeptical about such a condition and the lawfulness of it.
And actually, here's another practical aspect that I was just looking up. I asked the question, can she actually physically still have babies with being paralyzed from the waist down?
Sure.
Yes, possible, but it's a high-risk pregnancy. So she's got a higher risk of infections, blood clots, preterm labor, harder labor management. So she needs actually a specialized team of spinal care teams and obstetrics to actually manage that as well. So it's not impossible, but more improbable. As well as when you throw the legal issues on top of that, restrictions, the fact that the likelihood of her getting out, and then this is if she's not guilty by reason of sanity, likelihood of at least 16 years, if not longer, if by either her choice or the state's choice, I think it's really kind of a moot point.
Yeah. I mean, as far as advocacy goes for her, depending on where she ends up, obviously she has family. They've been standing behind her in court, so I would assume that they're still going to be there to an extent after, no matter where she goes. But is that, how key is that to any sort of, I don't know if treatment is the right word, or care, maybe more of the operative word, the care that she's going to get? How important is that she has people advocating for her care and her well-being versus just everyone abandoning her and saying, good luck with the system?
It is a critical piece to whether she would be released later if she is committed to a psychiatric facility, because she can petition every year in Massachusetts to try to get out. And when she does, what the court, what initially mental health folks will determine, and then perhaps a court might ultimately decide, is whether the level of dangerousness that she might have if she is let out. And it's just common sense that if a person has a pro-social support system, has people looking out for them, has a place to go, has a place to live, people who might feed her, people who might care for her, considering her physical disabilities and her mental health issues as well. That would make the fact finder much more inclined to say, hey, this person is less likely to be dangerous than someone who, if we let them out, you know, they're going under a bridge somewhere and God knows what happens after that.
Yeah. I mean, someone like her, there's high probability of abuse behind bars. There's high probability of abuse in a mental institution as well. It happens, unfortunately. So that's another thing that she's going to have to contend with. There's not, none of this is a great path for Lindsay Glancy. I mean, it's very much all, it's restrictive as it needs to be, based on what the jury is going to decide.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.